WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. On this day after Thanksgiving, we're talking Virginia politics on the podcast. Do voters have election fatigue from voting every year in the Old Dominion? We'll explore that and more. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, November 26th. There's an old saying that every year is election year in Virginia, and with state candidates running in odd-numbered years and then federal offices up in even years, that's true. So how did we get here? Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch joins Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope to explore the background of Virginia's off-year elections.
Virginia has this really odd history of having odd-year elections. Jeff Shapiro, how did all this start?
Back in 1851, which by Virginia standards is merely yesterday, until 1851, the governor was elected by the General Assembly. In that year, we went to direct election of our governor. And of course, in this most recent gubernatorial election, Terry McAuliffe attempted to match what has only been achieved once by a Virginia governor, Mills Godwin, elected twice by the vote of the people to non-consecutive terms. Remember, Virginia is the only state in the country that prohibits its governor from serving consecutive terms. But we have other oddities as well. There were annual elections for the House of Delegates for many years, up until the 1870s. Senators who were elected to four-year terms saw those terms staggered. So the state Senate was decided much as the U.S. Senate is, with blocks of seats up for grabs.
So you mentioned that 1851 election is when the governor started being elected popularly in odd years. But so before 1851, those House of Delegates elections were every single year, year after year?
That's correct. And just imagine how weary we can be keeping up with members of the House who are standing for election every 2 years. Just imagine what it might have been like dealing with political pressures every year. But, you know, one would note that, of course, politics was largely a game restricted to a very narrow slice of the electorate, between property requirements to exercise the vote, poll taxes, the effect of which was to erase blacks from the voting rolls, and to eliminate as well poor whites who couldn't come up with the money to pay their tax. That tax had to be paid 6 months before the Democratic primary. So you had to pay it in January before a primary in June, which at the time when Virginia was a one-party Democratic state, that primary was tantamount to election.
One other oddity I wanted to hit on before we go. So today we think of your vote as being a private thing, something you can keep secret, something you don't have to announce in public. But before the 1870s, wasn't voting essentially a public endeavor?
It required a declaration, indeed. We didn't go to the Australian ballot, the secret ballot, until after that. But these public declarations could be fascinating because it became a challenge to get people to the polls. And going all the way back to the colonial era, when George Washington stood for the Burgesses and was defeated the first time, he attributed his defeat in part to his failure to provide libation for his voters, as his opponent did, his successful opponent did. So when Washington stood next, he made sure he had a good deal of his Mount Vernon plantation produced whiskey to share with his supporters.
All right. Well, note to elected officials, next time you're running for election, bring libations and you may end up winning. Well, that's all the time we've got for this week. We will be back next week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
See you then.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Friday.